Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Rites Radio Self-Help Hour. I'm your host, Dr. Joyce Starr, and the Self-Help Hour is brought to you by StarPublications.com, that's Star with two R's, and by our media site, RightsRadio.com, where your consumer, homeowner, health, and safe pet care rights have a permanent address. Today's show is very exciting and important to me. We're going to be talking about Star Wars ballistic missile defense, national security defense against rogue nations. And my guest is Mike Gamble, former director of Boeing's Ballistic Missile Defense Program. Welcome, Mike.
Well, thank you for inviting me.
Oh, I'm so happy to have you on the program. I've known you for a long time, and you've been in the cat seat when it comes to how we can best defend our country. And so I thought we might start off this program with a little history. I know that President Reagan created the Star Wars program, which was called the Strategic Defense Initiative, in 1983, but can you give a little history around it and what happened?
Well, the Ballistic Missile Defense Program really began in the late 1950s at the same time that the United States and the Soviet Union were both developing various kinds of ballistic missiles as weapons. You may recall that the German scientists from Peenemünde came to this country under an operation at the end of World War II, or right after the close of the World War II in Europe. And that operation was called Paperclip. Out of Paperclip came the development of ballistic rockets as weapons for the United States. Actually, in the Soviet Union, there was a very similar program, and they started developing ballistic missiles also. In the late 50s, there was within the then War Department a program that was attempting to decide how the United States might defend its troops or its cities against the ballistic missile threat. And so it really all began in the 50s. However, in the 60s, the then Department of Defense made a decision based on analysis that they would adopt a strategy of mutual assured destruction. And the mutual assured destruction strategy basically said that we're better off to simply have the capability to vaporize an opponent. At that time, the Cold War was in full swing, so the Soviet Union was the potential target. And mutual assured destruction, or MAD, had as its premise that both sides were safer by exposing themselves to the other side's weaponry. In other words, that would lead to no one ever firing a ballistic missile in anger at another country. Well, mutual assured destruction did work to the extent that no one ever fired a ballistic missile in anger, an intercontinental ballistic missile with a nuclear warhead. There have been ballistic missiles that were fired in a tactical or theater sense, first by the Germans. The V-2s were launched from Germany and landed in England. And in more recent times, Israel was subjected to some ballistic missile threats from, my recollection was that it was from Iraq. Anyway.
Yes, it was. Right. I remember that.
Right. And so during the early part of the Reagan administration, which occurred around in the early 80s, there was there were some people who questioned the mutual assured destruction strategy, and President Reagan took it upon himself to make the decision to launch the Strategic Defense Initiative, which was commonly known, or certainly known in the press, as Star Wars, because of the speech that Senator Kennedy from Massachusetts made, in which he referred to it as Star Wars, and the name pretty much stuck. But during that time, there was a loud argument going on in this country, in the United States, over whether or not we should actually proceed to defend ourselves, whereas mutual assured destruction had in fact worked for so long. The program got started under President Reagan, and a number of different initiatives took place, the development of various kinds of sensors, the development of various kinds of interceptors, some fairly exotic weaponry. There are high-powered lasers that have been developed for purposes of the stopping ballistic missiles. There are a host of R&D programs that have been ongoing. Now, more recently, the decision was made to deploy a ground-based interceptor base in Alaska. And the construction of that base has been ongoing for approximately a decade. And the associated sensors had to be developed in order to allow the interceptors for that ground-based interception system to function.
Why has that been going on for a decade? Why would it take a whole decade?
Well, there have been a lot of arguments over the effectiveness of the interceptors that have been developed. Various tests have been conducted primarily out of Kwajalein Island in the Pacific against ballistic missiles arriving at our ballistic missile range out there. And the folks who don't want to see a ballistic missile defense deployment have argued that those tests to date have been inconclusive. And lots of shouting has been going on in both directions. The people who conducted the tests have defended their results. There have been some failures, there's without a doubt. As with any development program, there have been some failures. But the argument continues as to whether or not the development is mature enough to actually deploy the missiles. So the base is pretty well constructed in Alaska, as I understand it. However, I don't think, and I'll be honest with you, I don't really know whether or not any of the actual interceptors have been deployed.
Now, these interceptors in Alaska would be for a particular purpose, would they not?
Yes. The purpose of putting a base in Alaska is to be sure that we could intercept ballistic missiles as they're transiting the northern polar regions from somewhere in Asia to somewhere in North America. That's the reason for the erection of a fence, if you like it, if you like to think about it that way, in Alaska.
That's Asia. What about other forms of ballistic missile defense? Is that all we've got?
Well, several European countries became involved in the Strategic Defense Initiative during the 80s, and some very wise people observed that there were potential threats from the Middle East. There were concerns about Iraq. There have been concerns about Iran, and the possibility that if they had nuclear weapons or any weapon of mass destruction, they might threaten some of the European countries. Those are not intercontinental ranges. They're much shorter. And Israel, for instance, developed or began a development program. I'll be honest with you, I don't know whether they've deployed it, but they developed an interceptor system, a ground-based interceptor system, based largely on the threat to themselves from Iraq. And it's been argued that Europe could be defended by interceptor missiles launched from ships in the Mediterranean. And there is a component of the Strategic Defense Initiative now operated under the Missile Defense Agency. The Strategic Defense Initiative was renamed the Missile Defense Agency a few years ago. And they have an ongoing effort to prove that interceptors of the kind that we deploy on our anti-aircraft frigates in the U.S. Navy that could be used to intercept a ballistic threat going between the Middle East and Europe. There are a number of what I'll call theater scenarios where such a deployment could likely be very effective.
But what about the mainland of the United States, a rogue nation, Iran, North Korea? How does the rest of the United States stand against this threat today?
I'm afraid that we're pretty badly exposed to ballistic threats from just about anywhere, because, as I said, the only intercepted base that I'm aware of is the one that's been constructed in Alaska, and that, for instance, wouldn't be effective against a ballistic missile fired from Cuba. Now, you may recall that in the 60s, the Soviets placed some medium-range ballistic missiles in Cuba, and our response, President Kennedy's response, was to alert all of our strategic forces and essentially threaten to vaporize Cuba if any of those missiles were fired at the United States. But again, the defense was an offensive one, and because those were Soviet missiles, we also threatened to fire ballistic missiles at the Soviet Union if any missiles were launched from Cuba. But to my knowledge at the moment, there are no interceptors that are capable of defending such a threat?
You mentioned in our earlier discussions as we were planning for this call that Congress, in effect, destroyed or weakened Star Wars, or the whole concept of this ballistic missile defense system.
Yes. The studies that led up to President Reagan's initiation of the Strategic Defense Initiative depended on a multi-layered defense, and ground-based interceptors were only the last layer. The first layer of a defense against intercontinental ballistic missiles was to have been a space-based defensive weapon. And it was, to a large extent, the capabilities that were shown for that conceptual system that convinced President Reagan that he should go ahead with the Strategic Defense Initiative. But the Congress immediately started pointing to treaties that had been in negotiations for some time about the, the treaties essentially prevented any weapon being put in space. Now, originally, the weapons in space treaties were designed to prevent anyone from putting up an orbiting bomb. And there was even a concept floating around called FOBS, or the Fractional Orbiting Bombardment System. The FOBS was essentially a satellite that would go around the Earth maybe more than once. By definition, Joyce, an intercontinental ballistic missile is really just an Earth satellite, but it happens to be an Earth satellite where the orbit intersects the Earth twice, once at the launch point and once at the target. So most of us who have participated in this kind of analysis and these kinds of concepts regard a spacecraft and an intercontinental ballistic missile as two different versions of the same animal. And therefore, if you want to defend against an intercontinental ballistic missile, you pretty much have to be able to defend against a satellite. There are many people who are very nervous about putting any sort of weapon in space. And therein lies the question that you asked. Congress essentially refused to fund the development of weapons in space, even if those weapons are designed primarily in a defensive role, that is, to knock down intercontinental ballistic missiles or to destroy intercontinental ballistic missiles before they can do their job.
But this is very, I think, in a sense, very disconcerting. People would assume that since 9/11, at the very least, that we would have, with all the money that went into the military, we would have done much more to protect ourselves from those rogue nations. And from what you say, that is not the case.
Not to my knowledge, no. I'm afraid that the mutual assured destruction advocates have convinced most of our lawmakers that threatening to annihilate a rogue nation, if you want to think of it that way, is sufficient to deter anyone who might try to shoot a ballistic missile at us.
Except, of course, that today it isn't necessarily only the rogue nation, but those inside the rogue nation and into, you know, small sects, dangerous groups. It could be anyone.
Yes, I think the American people are beginning to realize that there are folks in the world who are quite willing to die in their attempts to damage us or kill us. We've seen that at 9/11 for sure. There were 19 guys who deliberately killed themselves trying to hurt us. And one has to ask, if you want to defend the United States against weapons of this kind, is the threat of a major strike against a country going to actually deter the people in that country from firing a weapon at us? There are an awful lot of people now who believe that there are some crazies around who might actually fire such a weapon. And I personally believe that we need to develop a more robust capability for defending against ballistic missiles.
Now, I would imagine if you asked the average American on the street, you took a survey on every block, they would tell you that George Bush invested a great deal in defense, in missile defense, since 9/11. And if he did not, which of course you're saying he did not, there is very little likelihood that the current administration is going to do so. It's just counter to their entire approach. Would that not be the case?
Well, there are some policymakers who are identified with the current administration who speak about defense as a cash cow that can be used to pay for a lot of other things. And why they don't feel threatened, I don't know.
So we're going to have excellent health at the time that we're vaporized by some rogue group. Right. I mean, it's very, very, very comforting. At least we'll feel well when it's happening. I think this is a very important interview. I hope that a lot of people will hear this show because you're putting it forward in very direct, straightforward language, and it's non-political, neither Republican, Democrat, or anything in between. It just is as it is. These are the facts. We do not have a ballistic missile defense system.
Right. We have people who set policy and people who decide how the United States is going to spend its resources who, frankly, don't see this as important enough to solve the problem.
Is there any reason why the Bush administration didn't go forward, or any intelligence that can be shared here to understand why they wouldn't have been more aggressive in this arena?
They were fairly aggressive in intent, but it was largely the meager appropriations that came out of the Congress that slowed the development of these defensive weapons. Yeah.
So you think that they would have gone forward if they could, but they were really unable to do so. They didn't have the vote.
Yes. I believe that the president's budget for the Missile Defense Agency and the Missile Defense Program were always substantially higher than the Appropriations Committees appropriated and or the Authorization Committees authorized. There was an argument every year on how much of the Pentagon budget would go to ballistic missile defense. And you have to remember that there are competing programs like new airplanes, new ships, a variety of needs that have to come out of the Pentagon's budget, and the ballistic missile defense budget is included right along with all those other things. So if you're in uniform and you need weapons of the kind that you are armed with, then you have to go forward and ask for funding for that. And eventually, there is a compromise that has to be reached. And ballistic missile defense pretty much came up short in the allocation of resources.
And what happens now that we can assume, let us assume for 4 years at least, not only will those meager funds remain where they were, but they'll probably be further diminished. So what happens when it's 4 years later? How does the nation catch up if it needs to?
The capability to build these defensive weapons has existed for quite a long time. But the amount of resource has to be increased so that the people who know how to do it can in fact actually build the devices and the system. It's always been within the realm of possibility to build these defenses, at least in my lifetime.
But can they step it up if they had to? Could they step it up quickly?
Well, they could. They could definitely step it up, but it won't appear instantly because the capabilities and the tools have been strung out for a very long period of time.
What is the feeling now? We just have about 1 minute remaining. So in your last minute here, could you tell me very quickly what's the feeling amongst your current or former defense colleagues about this issue? Do they feel very upset or worried?
Well,
what is the temperature?
Let me put it this way. Those of us who have been advocates for a robust defense as opposed to a robust offense, we didn't achieve the level of influence that we would like to have had in the allocation of resources. So a lot of other things got purchased, and a war has been going on for a very long time. And wars tend to take an awful lot of resource. So I guess I would have to say the people in the community that I belong to have plenty of incentive, but not enough resource to make it happen.
Mike, this has been a very important call. I can't thank you enough for taking the time to be on the Rights Radio Self-Help Hour, and we're trying to empower people to understand their rights. So again, thank you so much. And
you're very welcome.
Thank you. And this is Dr. Joyce Starr from rightsradio.com and the Rights Radio Self-Help Hour. And we will see you next week on Thursday at the same time.